Inherent, okay.
Yes. And then, and also incidental attribute.
Okay. Those are the inherent.
You've been absent. I mean, is Swamiji replacing inherent with incidental attribute in terms of
see,
Ishwara being?
Okay, I'll answer that, and then we'll go into pennies, and then we'll see what we're going to do after that.
Okay.
Om Tat Sat. This is still Satsang on Vishnu Sahasranama. Verse, what was it? 88. Questions come in off of this. The 88th phenomena. Let me get this here.
Which is in the verse.
The thing is, in terms of the relationship with the Maya, with Brahman, if you say something like inherent, it would mean, without bringing in something like what Swamiji brings in, incidental attribute, then the Maya can be considered a quality of Brahman because it's inherent in Brahman. Means it belongs to Brahman. It's natural and intrinsic part, inherent, intrinsic part of Brahman. But that's fine as long as you're talking about, can talk about the order of reality that Maya enjoys. Once you say that Maya is mithya, well, let me go back. The reason we would say, even bring up the word inherent or intrinsic, which are dangerous words because it implies a duality in Brahman.
Yeah.
When those words are used, it's usually in reference to the question, well, where does Maya exist? Where is it? Where is Maya? If Maya is not in Brahman, because Brahman is Satchitananda, non-dual, free of any and all attributes, then where to place Maya? Is there a place outside of Brahman to place Maya? Does Maya have its own existence, its own being, that Maya resolves into its causal condition, which itself is an existent being? So then you have non-dual Brahman, which is no longer non-dual, because you have Maya, which has its own being. So now you have Brahman, which is its own being, and you have Maya, which is its own being. And so you have to say that Maya is, if you use the word inherent, what all you're meaning there is that Maya is not away from Brahman. But then if you say inherent, or Swamiji doesn't really use this, he'll say, now it's an incidental attribute of Maya, of Brahman. Why he says that is because if you say it's an attribute of Brahman, then it doesn't belong somewhere else. It's an attribute of Brahman. But if you think it's an attribute of Brahman, then Brahman takes on the duality with sattva, rajas, and tamas of Maya, right? And then Brahman becomes dual because it has Maya as its attribute. So if you say incidental attribute, what incidental means is that it's not, it's not an intrinsic part. It's not a part of Brahman. It would be like saying, they use this example in terms of Lakshana. If say there's a row, there's a housing track, and all of the houses are exactly the same, okay? And one friend is trying to point out to another friend which of those houses is his house. And so he says, that's my house that has the crow on top of it. Say there's a crow sitting on the chimney or something. See the crow sitting on the chimney? That's my house. And so now that crow becomes an incidental attribute of the house.
Yeah.
Incidental means it's really not changing in any way the nature of the house, but it can be indicated by that.
Is it like saying heat is an incidental attribute of fire?
No, because heat is something that at least now I suppose we can have cold fire, but before we realize that you can have cold flame, the heat, in terms of the examples we use in the Shastra, heat is actually the attribute, the quality of fire, okay? So here when we're saying Maya is an attribute, then Swamiji decided to use this, because this is his term, an incidental attribute, which means that it doesn't bring about any change to Brahman. but there's no place else to put it because there is nothing but Brahman. So when you say Maya is an incidental attribute of Brahman, it's a way of saying Maya belongs to Brahman, but Brahman doesn't go through any change because of the presence or absence of Maya. You see what I mean? That's why he used incidental attribute. If we say inherent to Brahman, means it's natural to Brahman. But if once you say inherent or any word like this, you have to bring in this incidental, a word like incidental,
yeah.
Or you have to unfold that this Maya is inherent to Brahman. Brahman is never without that Maya, but that Maya has no independent being apart from Brahman. And so it's mithya. All the while, and all of these use of these words, if the satya-mithya relationship between Maya and Brahman is not understood, it will be misleading. That's why really the whole Vedanta rests on, the whole Advaita, and which is the Vedanta, rests on understanding the mithya-satyam relationship, where mithya actually is nothing but what is, and mithya is, it's an order of reality, it's not a thing. What, for something to be mithya, it means that it is, its being is 100% dependent upon its adhishtana. The adhishtana is satyam in reference to that which is mithya. The adhishtana is what is actually there. So clay pot, the adhishtana is clay because what is actually there is the clay. The mithya pot, that's the pot's order of reality, the pot has no being at all apart from the adhishtana. That's the relationship. So another way of understanding the relationship is that anvaya vyatireka, when this is just a little bit of an aside, when you're doing a logical analysis of your own personal experience to recognize the nature of the adhishtana, the nature of what actually is, you do the anvaya vyatireka, which is when this is, that is, when this is not, that still is. So when the mind is, I am. When the mind is not, I still am. When the waking state is, I am. When the waking state is replaced by the dream state, I still am. When this thought is, I am. When this thought is replaced by another thought, I still am. When this emotion is, I am. When this emotion is gone, replaced by another emotion, I still am. You know, when this body was 13, I was. Now this body is such and such. Never mind. I still am. That's the anvaya vyatireka. And this logic is an experiential logic. It's a logic that's applied to the actuality of your experience to help you differentiate the satyam from the mithya. It's one logic. So the whole idea here in understanding the relationship of Maya to Brahman is to understand that there is nothing there but Brahman. And so that's why Swamiji says Maya is an incidental attribute of Brahman, meaning it's mithya. You know, meaning that it doesn't change Brahman in any way whatsoever. So the Satchitananda non-dual Brahman remains exactly the same, but is the very Satchit of any experience that is there.
Do we have any example of that in the world?
Well, I mean, clay pot, the relationship you have with your mind, rope, snake, are all satyam mithya examples. Mm-hmm. I mean, a wonderful example of satyam mithya is the relationship you have with your own mind if you watch your thought flow. This thought comes into being, goes out of being. Next thought comes into being, out of being. It's kind of a chain thinking. Mm-hmm. But being doesn't come into being, go out of being. Knownness doesn't come into being and go out of being. It's just the object that is known comes into being and out of being. But there's an adhishtana there that is invariable. That invariable adhishtana, invariable means it doesn't go through any modification. It just remains invariable. So one of our, in terms of the whole teaching methodology, is to help the student recognize in your own experience that which is invariable. That which is invariable is not an object that you can have a subject-object relationship with. It's the very adhishtana,
yeah.
Your own presence. The reason that that presence, your own presence, is recognizable is because it's self-evident, you know, as self-evident consciousness. So that self-evident conscious being is the invariable in every experience that you have. You know, so That's
and it's one of the classic definitions of, I'm just, because I was just away for 2 weeks, but the classic definition of Maya, one of the ones we use is Byam Asit Byam Anirvachaniya.
There's two definitions, Seta Sed Byam Anirvachaniya. Anirvachaniya means that which cannot be defined, or sometimes Swamiji uses categorized, which is good. It can't be categorized as such, as satyam. Definition of satyam is that which cannot be negated in past, present, or future. Changeless. So it can't be categorized as satyam, nor can it be categorized as tucham. Tucham means non-existent, never was there. We can't say that this, which is categorized as mithya, is not here to be experienced. It is. But what is its order of reality? It's here to be experienced, so it's not tucham. Tucham would be something that's non-experienceable because it's not here. It doesn't exist. You can't say it's satyam because everything in your experience is bound by time. Right? It comes into being and goes out of being. It's bound by change. So that's not going to be satyam. There's only one thing that is satyam, and that is Brahman, because everything else exists within the object of creation, is subject to change. Even ajnanam, they say ajnanam is beginningless, but it's subject to, can come to an end. You know? So.
What was the second part of the second definition?
The second part of the definition is mithya depends, that which depends for its being upon an adhishtana. You can't understand that. The word mithya cannot be used, like a Buddhist can't use the word mithya unless they acknowledge an adhishtana. They say, if they can't say everything is mithya, because that's a misuse, and they wouldn't either. That would be a misuse of the word. They might say everything is subject to coming into being and going out of being. Everything is subject to change. Everything is interdependent. But they will never relate that, what we call, what's the word for that? You know, non-existence.
Shunyam.
The shunyatva, or shunyata, twarta, shunyata, that the emptiness that of the maya, or of this creation, they'll say a shunyata, means it's empty of essence. They can't say mithya. They'll say empty of essence. So shunyata in reference to namarupa, the namarupa, this is Nagarjuna, the namarupa, all the names and forms are empty, shunyata, they're empty of essence, of being. Where they'll say, this is Nagarjuna, remember there's many, many types of Buddhism. But in the Madhyamaka, Nagarjuna, who's famous for the shunyata, he will say, the paramartha, in paramartika, in the absolute reality, that is shunyata, devoid of namarupa. So he'll keep this, the shunyata, which is of paramartika, absolute shunyata, absolute emptiness, is really equivalent to Brahman, we would say. But he cannot relate in any way the shunyata of maya, of this, they can't say maya either, but of this world to Brahman. One is free, one is devoid of essence, one is devoid of namarupa. So there's a separation there. The reason that separation is there is because of the teaching methodology doesn't involve lakshana, or the implied meaning of the words. And so that means that the words that you use for a Buddhist, only the vachyartha, the immediate meaning of the word within duality, is what is used. So say, for instance, you use the word self. There's no lakshyartha. There's no implied meaning. There's only the obvious meaning of the word self, which would be this body, mind, sense organs. So the Buddhist will say, be what we call anatmavada. According to the Buddhist, the word, there is no self. What you think of when you use the word self is really just a conglomerate of many things put together. There is no such thing as self, because the word self, the immediate meaning of the word self that you use within duality, includes this, the total conglomerate of body, mind, sense organs. It doesn't include for you, it doesn't land upon, for an ajnani, it doesn't land upon a non-dual self. It lands on this body, mind, sense organ. So upon analysis, we do the same thing. Upon analysis, this body, mind, sense organs is just a conglomerate. and it's objectifiable, and it comes into being and goes out of being. So no, that is not the Atma. Well, they'll say, the word self, the vachyarta, the immediate meaning of the word self, means it's body, mind, sense organs, and there is no such thing as a self to be found.
Yeah. Why don't you think the implied meaning comes into play?
I don't know. Probably because they don't rely on the Shruti, they just rely on sense perception and inference. These are the two pramanas that they use. Yeah, that's a big discussion.
Okay,
yeah. Jenny, what was your question?
No, you kind of answered it, and that was Nitya, an order of reality, and Maya being the definition of Maya being
Yeah, well, yeah, actually.
And then,
let me say something about that.
Okay.
We would say, in terms of orders of reality, Satyam is an order of reality.
Mm-hmm.
The definition of Satyam is that which cannot be negated in past, present, and future. Mithya is an order of reality, and that the main definition is that which can't be categorized as set or aset. A secondary definition, which is important, is that which depends 100% totally on its adhishtana for its being.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So those are the definitions of the order of reality, mithya.
Could
now
you
if we
it,
say...
I'm sorry, the Satyam definition again?
That which cannot be negated in past, present, or future. Okay. Order of reality. The only thing that fits that order of reality is Brahman. Mithya. The only thing that fits that order of reality is Maya. Now the Maya can again be divided into Vyavaharika. Vyavaharika Satyam means empirical reality, shared reality. That's Maya. Pratibhasika Satyam, subjective reality, that also is Maya. The dream would be Pratibhasika, right? Because it's not shared. Your imagination, Pratibhasika. But your projections, Pratibhasika, subjective reality. But we say subjective reality in that it's there, it's not non-existent. That's what we mean by reality. We have Paramarthika Satyam, absolute reality. Then we have Vyavaharika, empirical. And then we have Vyavahara. And then we have Pratibhasika. The Vyavahara and Pratibhasika are levels of reality, right? But they are existing. They belong to Maya. So we have empirical reality that belongs to Maya. We have subjective reality that belongs to Maya. What is the order of reality of the Vyavahara and Pratibhasika Maya? What is the order of reality? Mithya. So you have Maya, Mithya, Brahman, Satyam, anything non-existent. The stock examples in the Shastra for something that would be Tucham would be the son of a barren woman, horn of a rabbit, city in the sky. Like the example when they say city in the sky, is if you look up at the clouds and the clouds kind of look like a city, you know? But there is no city there. There's no city in the sky. There's no sun. It doesn't exist.
So there's Pratibhasika of Vyavahara, and is there something that corresponds to deep sleep, the causal state, that's also mithya, or not?
No, not in terms of those two words.
There's not like a third word that fits
mm-mm.
in that. Okay.
No. That would come in the enfoldment of the Pratibhasika and the Vyavahara. You know, like what are the components of that empirical reality? We'd get back into the Kadanishulila, but no, there's no word that I know of that fits into that group. Even though it will fall into the group mithya. Because it comes to an end. Yeah.
What's the Sanskrit name again for the empirical reality?
Vyavahara.
Yeah.
Vyavahara or Vyavaharika. Hi. Like if I say Vyavaharika Satyam, it means empirical reality. As opposed to Paramarthika Satyam. Paramarthika Satyam would be absolute reality. Satyam means that which is. Okay, Satyam. So Paramarthika Satyam, that which is absolutely, means can never be negated. Vyavaharika Satyam is that shared reality, the empirical reality, which is subject to negation. Pratibhasika Satyam is subjective reality, which is not shared reality. It's individual reality, all subject to negation, all falls within the category of mithya. When we say satyam mithya, we're talking about paramarthika satyam.
Okay.
Right. But if you want to take reality, absolute paramarthika, absolute reality, vyavaharika, shared or empirical reality, means this that we're experiencing here. Pratibhasika means subjective reality. But if we're just talking about satyam versus mithya, you know, then satyam is paramarthika.
So saying vyavaharika satyam, why would you use the word satyam there?
It is used sometimes because this is not non-existent. It is.
Okay.
But its isness is mithya.
Okay.
Right? It's here to be experienced.
Okay.
And pratibhasika is here. It's here to be experienced.
It also is an offset to subjective reality. I mean, it shows that there is a subjective, you know,
yeah, there's a vyavahara. Well, there's paramarthika, the absolute reality that can never be negated. But then here is this, which is. It's just that the isness, right, is the adhishtana. And here in pratibhasika, the isness, the being, is again the adhishtana. That's why that vyavahara, so we say vyavahara or pratibhasika or vyavaharika tadita, you know, or pratibhasika tadita. Then we're adding the satyam.
Mm-hmm. Would you ever add satyam to, would you ever use the phrase pratibhasika satyam or?
Pratibhasika. Because adjectival.
Right, would you say you would use that phrase as well then? Pratibhasika.
Pratibhasika. Pra.
Pratibhasika.
Pratibhasika. It's a tadita for the satyam. We usually don't, I mean, we can say it that way, or you can just say vyavahara and pratibhasika,
right.
You know. But you have to understand what's happening. If you're using the word satyam, and you're differentiating, one is absolute, I mean, it's the being that we experience that is Brahman, that can never be negated. But this world has being also.
Mm-hmm.
It has such shit, right? Because it's mithya. The sat-chit that it enjoys is actually Brahman, but from the standpoint of this shared reality, it enjoys being, but that being is mithya. The being, this vyavahara itself is mithya, means the sat-chit, the satyam that it enjoys, is its self, is its adhishtana. And the pratibhasika enjoys sat-chit also, but the sat-chit is its adhishtana, right? Whereas for Brahman, the sat-chit, it's not the adhishtana, it's what is. There's, you know, it's just looking at what is Brahman in and of itself. Like,
so,
I could say, once you understand satyam and mithya, I could say, this is only Brahman. There's nothing here but Brahman. Like, I can say to the pot, listen, you are only clay. There's nothing else. Nothing else at all. And if you have, but to say that, you have to understand satyam mithya, because there's the pot, you know. But the pot has to understand that really its being is only clay. But there's the pot, you know. But the pot, that's why we say the pot is mithya. It depends totally 100% on clay for its being, but we're not negating the pot experience. We're
so
not negating
it. We're always experiencing Brahman, then, is that
what you mean? Well, when you say experiencing, that has a verbal note to it. You would say in every experience that you have, the adhishtana is me,
yeah.
Is Brahman.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's never not there, ever.
Yeah.
And so then to really differentiate Brahman from all of your experiences, any experience that can be negated is not Brahman. Even deep sleep, knowership is negated. Subject-object relationship is negated. That can't be Brahman. The only thing, Brahman can never be negated. It is the very being of all experience. But that's kind of the Achilles heel to the Ajnanam, you know, because you are there and you cannot be negated at any time because the self-experience of Brahman isn't dependent upon mithya. Mithya has no being for it to be dependent upon it. You know, and all things that come into being and go out of being are mithya. So it gives you something to work with in terms of your own experience. If you can get rid of it, it's not you. You know? So what is it? And if you can objectify it and look at it, of course if you can objectify it, it's subject to duality and will change. And so consciousness doesn't need to be objectified. It already is what we call swatasiddha, self-evident, swaprakasha, self-luminous as consciousness. It doesn't need to be objectified. It needs to be differentiated. So how to differentiate it? Is to see what remains after I try to negate everything. Negate everything that can be negated. This one thing you can't negate, the me, the conscious being. That's what makes this knowledge so accessible, so accessible, and at the same time, our notions are prohibitive, make it difficult. Because, for instance, even in terms of gaining knowledge, our concept of gaining knowledge is to have an experience of something that is not here,
yeah.
Right? And so that means I have to, we have this, what we call vritti-vyapti and pala-vyapti, vritti-vyapti in terms of gaining knowledge. Vritti-vyapti means, I have to have a vritti, a thought modification, of the object, and when I get a thought modification of the object, then that needs to be known. It's illumined by consciousness. So first of all, I think now I have to get a vritti of the self in order to know the self, and in my mind I think that vritti is of something other than me.
Yeah.
I don't even think about it. Other than me, the mind, body, sense organs, now this me needs to get a vritti of the Brahman. And Brahman is going to be something that is not here now. And so when I get that vritti of Brahman, which is called vritti-vyapti, a pala-vyapti will be take place, means it will be known, because the vritti is being illumined by consciousness, and now it is known. And so even in meditation and all of these things, we're trying to get a vritti or an experience of Brahman so that I can know myself. The problem with that is that the self is already here as the very self of every vritti. And so the whole vritti-vyapti, pala-vyapti is going to be very different. What has to happen is that the content of any vritti, now the sat-chit of the vritti, has to become the vyapti. In other words, the vritti itself has to recognize its own content.
Yeah.
And in the recognition of its own content, the sat-chit, there's not going to be any pala-vyapti, because the pala-vyapti is already there as consciousness.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And so what this means is there has to be a recognition of what is already present as me, not the gain of a new me or a big me or a Brahman, an enlightened me. And we don't think like that, because in the world, gaining knowledge means, first of all, getting a vritti-vyapti of something that we don't know, that is not here. And so that's why this kind of unfoldment becomes so important. Because otherwise, we're on an endless, infinite, non-productive trip. Totally non-productive. It's not going to resolve.
Quest.
It's a quest. It's an infinite quest into Maya. Looking within subtle realms of time and space, looking for this Brahman. Whereas the Brahman is the very nature of the seeker. So it requires a whole different orientation to knowing, which has to be taught. This whole conversation that we're having right now is part of the pramana. You know, you can't unfold this without this conversation. That's why we have terms for it. And
okay, and now about the creation coming in manifest.
And unmanifest?
Becoming manifest because of the combined prarabdha karmas of the jivas.
Oh.
Driving that.
Oh. You know, that type of, that is not a true logic. That's a logic that's going to be negated. Because there's a word for it. It's called Praudavada. It's a logic to just to quieten somebody up. But on okay. But upon analysis, that logic won't hold. And the reason it won't hold is because that is taking place within Maya itself.
Right.
Right? And so it doesn't hold. So you're talking about, okay, why does the creation come into manifestation? You can say, well, it's the collective karmas of all of the jivas. It's time for it to wake up. Okay? But you have to go deeper than that. In that, because from the standpoint of Brahman, there's nobody waking up anything.
Right.
Brahman is always just the Satchitatma. And the Maya, from beginningless time, has this cyclical relationship. Not relationship with Brahman, that's its nature. To come into manifestation, the Srishti Stiti Laya. There's no reason for it. Now, when you say there's no reason for it, what that means is that reason and cause-effect relationship belong to Maya. Mm-hmm. They belong to duality. There is no cause-effect relationship for what is non-dual or what is beginningless. Mm-hmm. Because you're beyond time there. So all cause-effect relationship require being within time. Yeah. And so, like say you were to ask, you know, why is there Brahman? Why did Brahman come? Well, Brahman never came. But Brahman is non-dual. Brahman is what is. So there's no reason, because there's no time, there's no change. Then another question is, why did Ishvara do it this way? He could have done better. He could have made a creation, you know, for instance, that didn't have any suffering. What was he thinking?
He could have made it easier. Yeah.
What kind of a God would create a creation that caused so much suffering to so many people, to all of the jivas? That doesn't seem like a very nice God. So Ishvara must have something, you know, wrong with him. But Ishvara himself has no grandfather or father. Ishvara is beginningless. There's no one deciding. There's no Ishvara deciding. Let's make the creation like this. The creation is like this. Ishvara is like this. And it is beginningless. So Brahman with the Maya Upadhi is what is. You're beyond cause and effect, even for Ishvara. Because otherwise, who is Ishvara's father, and who is his father, and who is his father, and who is his father? You're again in time again. But Maya is not in time. Maya is beginningless. Not in time in the sense of being beginningless. There's no first creation. See, if there was a first creation, who's going to create it? Brahman's not. Because Brahman is non-dual, right? And so what if Maya has to be created? Who's going to create it? Right? There's no creator in Brahman, you know? And so Brahman's not going to create it. So either Maya is, or it doesn't exist. Because who would be its creator? Is it going to create itself? Well, if it's going to create itself, that goes into an infinite regress of beginninglessness.
Well, why is it necessary for us to understand why is it necessary for us to understand whether it's cyclical or it's not cyclical or how it happened? I mean, why?
Because the mind wants to know. If your mind doesn't want to know, then it's not an issue to you.
But it's different. The mind wants to know itself is one thing, but wanting to know the nature of creation and how creation came about.
Because it's a question.
None of its business.
It's a question. Because, but no, because it's an.
You want the job description.
It's a question. It's a question that can come to the mind, and remember. The identification that you have when you come to this knowledge has to do with you as a jiva who lives in this world, in this reality. So now, who am I? What is this reality? And is there a God?
Right.
Right? So jiva jagadishwara. This is what we have to deal with. So you want to know, is there a God or is there not a God? Do I survive death or don't I survive? Survive death.
But that is a different question from saying what is the cyclical nature of creation? That is a different
not really, because if you say is there a God? And say that the Shruti says, yes, there is a God. Well, who is that God? And what is the relationship of that God to this creation? Did that God, Ishwara, create this creation? And why didn't he do a better job? What is the relationship?
Well, you can say, okay, you know, God is, I am part of God. I can have a concept of God and Ishwara without saying, well, now the Shruti must answer to me how God is doing his job. How Ishwara is kind of, you know, I mean.
But I think that these are all fair and timeless human questions.
Yeah.
There is an answer, right?
Doesn't it help you understand what Ishwara is all about?
It helps you understand Ishwara. It helps you understand yourself as a jiva. It helps you understand this creation.
Yeah.
Even the Panchikarana. You know, the Sutra, Rajas, and Tamas, and how it helps you understand and resolve the jiva, and every part of the jiva.
Yeah.
It means the sense organs, the mind, the karmendriyas, the body. How to resolve all of this into Ishwara, into the whole Maya Upadi, leaving out the conscious being, which is the Adhishtana of the whole thing. So it's a model meant for resolution of the Maya Upadi of the whole Maya Upadi, the resolution of the jiva into the Maya Upadi, and the resolution of the Maya Upadi into Mithya, with leaving Brahman as the Adhishtana. So all of these models, all of these answers are something which help the, which are in, what do you say, I forget the word I want to say, it's in support of the jiva gaining this knowledge.
But some of the models are cultural and time-based, and there is no model that doesn't mesh into the framework that the Veda is revealing. So when we talk of these models, is it useful to realize, to think, maybe, that some of the models were at the time, you know, like whatever, 4,000 years ago, whenever, you know, the Upanishads came around, that some of the models were of that time? Maybe some of the models now we can think about differently. They don't negate.
No, but since
negate.
No, they don't negate Ishwara. You could say that you could come up with more scientific model of this time, that with more scientific language or language appropriate to this time, in order to do the same type of resolution.
Mm-hmm.
But you should also kind of have the flexibility, I think, to understand what this model is pointing to.
Absolutely.
And the things that it is using are there to be understood. Space, air, fire, water, earth. Those are there. The elementals, those things are there. Relationships between the eye and form, ear and sound, those relationships are there.
Absolutely.
And so your mind should have the flexibility to use that model. And then you can say, okay, this is the model they've used for thousands of years. It has its own truth, its own relevance. It has and it's making a point because it's using things that are actually here to be seen. Because it's not using a scientific model to do the same thing, doesn't negate the power of this model.
Absolutely. The only thing I'm asking is the other way around is true as well, right? That it's okay to step back once you've understood what the model has to reveal. It's okay to step back from there and take it in context. And say, I am understanding what this model is revealing. And then say, okay, and, you know, if my knowledge of human knowledge has gone forward in the last 4,000 years, that also holds up to what this model is revealing.
Yes, that's fine. There's no problem there. But to denigrate this, now I'm not saying you are. I'm not saying you are.
Yeah.
But I'm saying to denigrate the efficacy or the reality of this model is not right. Because the model itself is talking about things that are in our experience. And so even though it may be simple and in broad strokes, it's talking about what we actually experience and putting it into an order that is useful for understanding my nature.
So I'll tell you, it's the trouble that I have sometimes is when we talk about Panchikarana and we talk about those models, those are not in my experience. You know, how the Panchikarna model is not talking about something that is in my experience. It's talking about the result is in my experience. You know, what Panchikarna results in the material world, that material world is in my experience. But how Maya works according to those models. You know, the model is beautiful. And I can appreciate